We're convening a work session, a component of the regular scheduled meeting of the San Juan County Public Hospital District Number One. The time is about 1:02. Today's date is Wednesday, April 24th, 2019. And this work session is designed to welcome potential candidates for the PhD and to give them sort of an introduction in terms of what we do, why we do it, and our limitations given by applicable. And I just broke the rule, but. And things of that sort. Anticipating a packed crowd, I think, unless the folks who are in attendance, which I think I can count them on one hand, three or so, are interested or want to ask us questions, starting with Pam or Nathan, in terms of what we do, why we do it, then. We can.
Interested in running,
you know, all that stuff. We did get a pay raise. The tail of
128.
128 a meeting, is that correct?
Yes. A day.
And 14 years.
Multiple meetings.
A meeting, yes. One meeting a day, typically.
A week in a day.
And it started at 109 a meeting, and that was 14 years ago for me. So it's, you know.
They got a huge raise.
It's slipping behind the cost of doing a business and cost of living. Anyhow, board, it's up to you as far as what you'd like to do in lieu of what we plan for. Mark, any ideas?
Well, I think Pam and Nathan had suggested possibly discussing the commissioner job description document.
Okay.
That, or we can do some long-term planning or something like that, something that doesn't involve taking action, just discussing.
Or brainstorm ideas about how to get more people to want to be candidates.
That too.
Yeah.
This event was not well publicized because we released the press release late last week, and we knew at the time that this event wouldn't get a lot of traction because it was only posted for a few days. But the next event on May 9th will be much better publicized, and we're putting out there's plenty of time between now and then to kind of put out the full court press. And we've sent out invitations to different groups in the community, as many as we can think of. So.
Yeah, that's probably the lion's share of it, Warren. And we anticipated that. That said, it's good to get a jump start on it. And it's for anybody who's potentially be interested in being a commissioner down the road, it's a very complicated job. It takes really, I was told by Robin Van Heining 14 years ago, it takes you 2 years to feel at all comfortable, and she was right. So, any event, hopefully the next meeting to address this will be much more.
It's May 9th at 5 o'clock here.
And we're going to have an open house, an EMS open house. That'll help get more people in the door.
Absolutely, and I think the plan was for those people who are interested, being that EMS is one section of what this board governs over, is to show the facility, show off the facility, answer any questions, explain what we've got here, what we do. So we're more than welcome. Yeah, people are more than welcome and happy to share.
And you're talking about today's meeting, too.
Absolutely. Right. So if anybody wants a tour, let me know. Show you the whole shoot match.
Tour questions.
I would respond by saying I think the publicity has been terrific. I mean, front and center, San Juan Islanders. I've seen it in all these different places.
Oh, good.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. And we have it on our website.
Yeah.
We also wanted, we thought that maybe there might not be a lot of people that attend this because it was a shorter notice, but we wanted to give the public the opportunity to have, we knew we would have all the commissioners here at this meeting for sure, so that if they wanted to ask questions about what they do or Carl or something or any of us about our meetings or the facilities, we knew that we would have all the personnel here. At least for this meeting, the May 9th meeting, we'll have most everybody, but because of scheduling, you know, it might not have all of the commissioners at that open house.
So there is some food and stuff. I mean, might as well.
Yes, there's some fruit, cheese, vegetables.
I think the coffee's fresh.
Yeah, Carl is in charge of the coffee. You don't want me making the coffee because I don't drink coffee and it just turns out terrible. But he is excellent with that coffee maker.
So, Commissioner Smith, since the chair is off doing something, what
would
you...
The chair is off for just a couple minutes and he'll be back. But meanwhile, perhaps we should move on to a next subject since... you want to look at the job description of the commissioners?
Is it?
That's new for the job commissioner.
Did any of you want the chance to mingle with the commissioners for a few minutes? We can do that. There's not very many of you here, so. Okay. Yeah.
I may come back too.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine, too. Yeah.
So can I ask you guys a question? What do you think would get candidates... What do you think would make people want to be candidates for this commission? Now, what do you see as attractive of coming to these meetings? You come to them. Or is there some other way that we need to engage the community to have candidates? I don't know. I just don't know. I don't even know if it's a problem. But maybe you guys know if it's a problem.
I'm particularly interested in reproductive health, personally. So it's important to me that we keep the money that goes to Planned Parenthood because Peace Health doesn't provide for all the needs that the state requires or that people require. So I want to get people, that's what I want my candidates to be sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested always to see how, as a board, you work together, how you listen to each other, how you respond to each other. I'm thinking about the various, well, of course now, it's going to be vital that we know about the merger. What happens and who are the people involved and
it escapes me right now.
How it's going to affect us. I'd like to see the tag. I'm interested to hear the results from them. Maybe I have missed a meeting where, well, I know there was a meeting where they told their decision and I wasn't here. But I don't know if any of them are here.
You could, our minutes actually, I think, or the minutes from that meeting will give you some indication of what they did and what they
recommended. I think, actually,
recommended.
I think I had read that.
Yeah.
It was online, I think. I mean,
it was. So that will give you an idea of what they said.
Mm-hmm. And I'll be discussing that to some extent in my report, my operations
report. Yeah,
good.
It was interesting to me, the press reports after that meeting. I left a little bit early, 10 minutes before it ended, I think. So I read the press reports very eagerly. And I got two entirely different impressions from two of them. One, that they're going to go ahead, it's all set. And the other one, that it's proposed, and we'll see what happens.
Well, the CAG did recommend the merger. And from that, and they had a lot of recommendations involved in that. But from that, they recommended that, or actually, I don't think it was from the CAG they recommended, but then the boards decided that they would have a steering committee to proceed from where the CAG is leading off. So the CAG came up with the recommendations, did all the research, and then the steering committee will move from there to look at the operational side of it. So I think that is kind of where we are.
Yeah, the town has selected Duncan Wilson as their candidate. Both chiefs will be on the steering committee. And today, who's the fire?
Frank.
Yeah, Frank Barnard.
And then today we'll delegate one of our members as well to participate in the steering committee.
And the first, the date of the first meeting for that, Carl, is when?
Tentatively scheduled for the 29th.
Very good.
Which is this coming Monday afternoon.
April is over.
Right.
Wow.
And then my understanding of the process as well is that once we lay out some very specific details, that still both governing boards have to give final approval to that. It's even though the CAG has said and both boards of commissioners have agreed to further pursue it, nothing binding has happened yet.
I'm sorry, did you say meeting date has been set for a first meeting?
Tentatively. Again, it depends on availability. I believe Commissioner Cardinale has been contacted, but we're not sure who our delegate is from the public hospital district and if they're available that particular day. But Nathan, Chief Collins, and myself got together with Duncan Wilson to kind of set an agenda for this first meeting. And that was our plan, was to get together on Monday the 29th.
Thank you.
And that meeting will be public, Richard. And we'll post notice on our website. And we haven't quite worked out how we're going to handle all the public notices for that. But
well, you certainly did a good job with the CAG.
Thank you.
Created a great roadmap for consolidation. We owe them a lot for that.
And now that the press is starting covering that joint meeting and everything, if people didn't realize that was going on, the hospital district website has all, you know, a section on the Citizens Advisory Group, and it lists all the minutes and things pertinent to it and the things they talked about. So if they want to go back and look at that part of it, along with the report, right, it's on there. So.
Thank you. I'm also interested in the medevac, the airplane, the airlift. I don't quite understand why Airlift Northwest came on so strong. I don't know what happened to Island Air.
I mean, are you talking about the Kaiser denials, or are you talking?
Well, there's Kaiser too.
Okay.
That's a whole other one.
Oh, okay.
But when I came at the last meeting, you were talking about
the helipad
and all kinds of stuff. That's I don't know. I don't know enough about it. I don't know if it's needed.
Mark can answer that.
Well, they're two different issues.
Oh, that's right.
You know, the retrospective denials by...
Oh, those are entirely two different issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So an update with regards to the former, the denials by Kaiser, there was a special meeting of a number of folks. Actually, there was a short piece in the San Juan Islander.
Sure.
That well represented that meeting. And I think it got some, from what I understand, some level of traction with Kaiser Permanente. It was still a very complicated process.
Well, on the 25th, there's going to be a community meeting.
Correct. And that's basically designed to educate the community in terms of, hey, if you do suffer a denial, you know, what do you do to respond to that? The hoops and ropes.
I get it.
That you go through, and it's going to be a short piece from Dr. Appleton and from Airlift Northwest. Chris Martin and Will Hamilton from Island Air Ambulance that will explain the situation from their point of view, what they have experienced since September of last year, but also how they can individually, as organizations, help patients out in dealing with these denials. So it's going to be a great program, 6:30, Mullis Senior Center.
Regarding the helipad, Airlift Northwest's presentation was to pay for the installation of a helipad adjacent to our emergency department, which is a typical installation. We had an expert come in, David Ketchum, who's created 300 helipads around the United States. And Airlift's view is that patient care is at the top of the list, and that this would shave off 19 minutes from the average transport. So, given that it would be a benefit to the community, or possible benefit to the community, we decided to form a study group and evaluate this. And that study group is comprised of Carl and Ari Hobble and Bob Runkow and myself. And so we're getting community perspective concerning that. We've invited community comment, but the deadline.
What kind of community perspective do you get with Ari Hobble and Bob Runkow?
What do you mean?
Well, that's not the community.
Well, they're on the committee to solicit community perspective. You object to them?
Well, I don't object to them. What I'm missing is a picture of what this who this community is. I mean, these are people that have been around for a long, long time. And I don't see any younger people. I don't see any women. I don't see a committee that's diverse.
It's a study group. This is not...
Women, other people study. I'm arguing with you. I don't mean to, but I'm appalled. So, excuse me.
Were you equally appalled at the formation of the Citizens Advisory Group that studied the fire and EMS integration? There were no women involved, and they were all older folks.
Yeah, well, I...
Was that a problem?
I think we don't need to go...
Okay.
Into
right.
this whole thing.
I concur. We don't need to.
But
we're looking up for objective information, and we would intend to solicit the community perspectives, and we have done so. We sent out 16 emails to interested community members, or whom we suppose would be interested, and we're awaiting their feedback.
Good.
And if people have nothing to say one way or another, that's an answer too.
Yes.
You sent out 16 emails, 1-6?
1-6. To people such as Island Air, mm-hmm. Westwind Aviation, the Port of Friday Harbor, and PSEL, and a number of people there in that organization, as well as Lifelight and Airlift. So.
When you meet and have those study groups, will those be open to the public?
No, it's four people. It's not subject to open public meetings. It's not... It's a study group. We're having a hard time of that getting together here in the near term to do our jobs. But we are going to be the locus for information that would come to us that would be the basis for a short report back to this board.
So if I can ask, what compelling reason would there be for those meetings not to be open to the public? CAG opened all of their meetings to the public. Certainly hope the task force intends to do that. Nathan says first one will be. So what compelling reason could there possibly be for those meetings not being public?
If you want to come, you're welcome. We don't have a problem with that. It's just...
Are you going to advertise them, or are you going to put them on the website?
We could do that. What's the thoughts? What is the board delegated the committee? What's the board concern?
Why not?
Yeah, you can put them on.
Okay.
Now, that one caveat, maybe multiple. And that's assuming the other so necessary participants, starting with Peace Island, Island Air and Airlift, don't have objections. If any one of those instrumental components refuses, then we're going to have to refuse. Otherwise, the job doesn't get done.
Again, this is preliminary fact-finding. And the idea is, as Commissioner Schwinge was saying, is to solicit comments from who we felt were people who had a kind of a direct role to play with it. before bringing it back to this board of commissioners, and then whether they decide to act on it, bring that out for more public comment, just to kind of lay out the facts, address the concerns, address what we would see as the potential benefits for that, and then moving forward. So we're still in a very preliminary state. This is by no means anything definitive in terms of we're asking, demanding, nothing like that. It's just more or less right now to see what are the potential benefits, what are the concerns brought out by some of the parties involved, and how we may be able to mitigate those concerns.
And I don't have any problem with what you just said, Carl, but I don't hear anything in what you just said that would be a defense for not doing it in public, given that it would be responding to or reporting to a public commission.
It hadn't been considered at the beginning, but I'm glad you brought it up.
I didn't bring it up, but
whomever.
Yes. Mark, can you share with us? I'm not familiar with either of the citizens that you have on your committee. Can you share with us a little bit about their background, just so we understand what they're bringing to the table?
Yeah, Bob Brunkow has been a long time, actually both have been long time committee members. And Bob has a lot of aviation background. He's the founder of ICAW, which is an avionics company. Mm-hmm. Very successful businessman. Mm-hmm. He was involved with analysis of the Peace Island Medical Center establishment back in 2012. Mm-hmm. Ari Hubble is something of a polymath in many capabilities. He's a retired pilot. He's been in the community for quite some time as well.
Is there anybody available in the community with, like a helicopter background? Something like that? I mean, there's the thing I just keep thinking about with this space is just that it's small, you know, and what it means. You know, that would just be good insight. Rather than, I mean, I think are they helicopter pilots or are they airplane pilots? That's a really different thing.
It is, but the sensibilities are relative to aircraft and air employees. And we do have the expert testimony already of David Ketchum, and we'll continue to solicit that information in tension with other perspectives. And any questions that come up operationally, we're just going to shut off to people with that expertise. Rick Frazier, who is a helicopter pilot, has been invited to contribute as well.
Okay.
So we're looking for the expertise. We're also concerned with Island Air's perspectives, and we want to get their take on it. So I think it's a fairly reasonable, broad-based expression of.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's important to preserve the relationship with Island Air, certainly, because there are times when helicopters just cannot fly.
Yeah, that's all part of the
study. And so that's very important that we support and maintain that relationship.
Absolutely. I concur. And so we want to be careful with regard to any competitive advantage that might impact Island Air. So we're looking at the first top of the list is patient care. What's best for the patient?
Sure.
And Public Hospital District has that responsibility from the center.
Now, is there anyone with a medical background on this committee that could actually say, you know, how saving that amount of time would really impact patient care?
Yeah, this report will go to the Public Hospital District Board, on which sit two physicians. Both with emergency.
So that's not what you're researching, but that's something that we'll do later.
Yeah, this is a preliminary gathering of information that is evaluating the claims of the Airlift Northwest presentation from the perspective of community benefit.
The one concern I really have is that it does cut a significant amount of revenue from EMS, and that's a really important part of how we fund our programs. And I understand the reasoning here, but I do think that we as commissioners have a responsibility to EMS. And so have you talked about budgetary issues and how EMS would function without that?
I've been tasked with that, is to come up with the metrics involved.
Okay.
And in fact, Chief Martin had started that process and started compiling data and shared that with me, and now we're sharing it with the study group.
Okay.
Yeah, so we've got some good perspective from 2018, and I'm working on carrying that through to 2019.
Great. I just, I think there have been great strides made in terms of finances and accounting practices at EMS in the last few years, and I just would hate to see, you know, revenue cut if it didn't have to be. I understand efficiency and patient care is a priority, but that's just something I'm concerned about.
Well, patient care is at the top of the list.
Of course.
What's best for the patients in our district? Mm-hmm. That is the very first and most important question of all. If the public hospital district sees a fall off of some, or I should say very particularly EMS sees a fall off of some revenues, and it's to the benefit of the patient, and that they have fewer transfers, free transfers, cheap transfers, there's a lower cost and it saves time. Mm-hmm. I think those are compelling reasons that we need to look at. So
sure.
It's all part of the study.
Yep.
And it is yet to be written, but these things are in view, including the finances.
Oh, yeah, and I'm just curious about the whole process. And so the property where this proposed helipad is that Port property then?
No, it's not Port property.
It's not, but
it's
Peace Health. It's Peace Health property. Yeah. So it's so interesting, like, because then the helicopter would come into Port airspace. I'm just curious about how that would, what does the Port say about that? Because we have an unmanned tower, obviously.
We have UNICOM. It is not Port airspace.
Okay.
Airspace belongs to the FAA. The ground facility would be a private helipad, and operators using that helipad would do so based on a memorandum of understanding between Peace Health and those operators. So it would be at the choice of Peace Health as to who would be using their helipad. The helipad. Yeah.
So even if Airlift Northwest is planning to finance it, Peace Health still has jurisdiction over
Freedom Land. Absolutely. And so these are the very questions that are going to be addressed in this study.
Okay.
So they're good questions.
Thank you.
Coast Guard will be involved?
I don't think they can land there.
Something we're looking
That's
at.
That's the question.
I mean, yeah. Is to see what the design would be that would accommodate what they're classifying their helicopters as H1 and H2. The H3 is obviously kind of off the table. Those are the big Chinooks.
Yeah.
We're not planning on those. But just to kind of see what those options would be with this, what they're proposing, would it be able to handle both H1 and H2, or what would it take to take a proposed H1 and beef it up so it could be an H2? We're trying to look at all those pieces. And hopefully we'll come back with a good thorough report that has good analysis and good background for you guys to make a decision.
We're leaning on the expertise of the people that do this for a living. David Ketchum is a very credible and credible individual, and he made our presentation here. So we'll be contacting him again, and we also would like to speak with the Peace Health folks and just have a dialogue between those two and then report back the substance of that. Again, the question is, what's going to be good for our community? What's going to be good for the patients? Airspace issues will be studied. Right now, of course, anybody approaching Friday Harbor flies a pattern to get here, and they also they land on the surface of the helipad, or, you know, let's say on the runway or the helipad. There's also ramp space that's been used in times past for helicopters. In a mass casualty event, the existing helipad would still be in place.
Mm-hmm.
And we would have the additional resource of this helipad adjacent to the ED. And again, time makes a difference. I'm sure Drs. Appleton and Edwards can speak to the criticality of time and patient transport.
That's a given.
Can I have another question, Mark?
Sure.
How did this all come about? I mean, who decided that we needed to change our heliport? Or how? Why were we not adequate?
Oh, it's not a question of making a decision. First of all, no decisions have been made. With regard to adequacy, it gets down to an issue of patient transfer times and also the number of sheet transfers. And people like Carl could speak better to that, but every time a patient is transferred, there's the risk of a displacement of an IV line or an ET endotracheal tube as the patient is moved around.
Has it ever happened?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's a real deal.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, once again, people can, qualified individuals can speak from their own personal experience, perhaps, with regard to this, including Carl. So there's that. But the big issue with a patient transfer in emergent circumstances, I understand it, and I'm no expert, is that time is critical. They speak of a golden hour. Other metrics, I believe, are a 90-minute time frame. And again, we have here an emergency room doctor that could write volumes on the subject.
Who initiated on this?
Airlift approached with a presentation, and this was in discussion back in 2016, and even earlier when the hospital was first being designed. There was a discussion about a helipad placement, and at the time it was had a high price tag. I believe it was $350,000
for one on the roof of the facility.
Yeah, so it's a kind of a different thing. This would be an on grade, that is to say, on the ground helipad, and the expense yet to be determined, but the numbers that have been presented by Airlift would be paying for it between $50,000 and $70,000. So it's a less expensive development. And just because of circumstances to yet be investigated, the matter hasn't moved forward. But Airlift now has represented the subject, and so the Public Hospital District has agreed to look at it, and that's what the study group is about.
So, Mark, is something, mark me if I'm wrong, but I remember the gentleman from Airlift, when we asked the question about money, he wasn't quite as firm about saying, oh, yeah, we're going to pay for it. Well, no, I can't make that. And that's above his pay grade, basically, to make that commitment. But now you said they would. Has something changed since the last meeting?
No, what he said at the meeting was that the program, the plan to build, would not fail for lack of funding. And so tacitly they're saying that it would receive funding. What they would like to see, I think, and this is reading between their lines, is they would like to see some other, perhaps, participation. But I've made the point in the meeting that we don't have the pockets to pony up that kind of cash. It just remains to be seen where that funding comes from. But the warrant that was given to them is that the project would not go forward for lack of funding, so that they would pay it. And when they made original representation concerning this, they said at that time, this goes back over a year, that they would pay for it. That was in print. I've got it. So now they're edging their bets a little bit. They want to see, I think, a broader based interest and support of this. Part of that, I think, could be political. They don't want to be accused of trying to steal market share or whatnot. They are saying that their interest is community benefit.
I think a lot of these questions will be answered by your study. I mean, that's what the study is.
That's the intent.
So
is the study going to include the medical transfer part or not? Is that Peace Health going to do their study? Because quite frankly, I've probably done more transfers than everyone on this island except the older ones of the paramedics. And I did one I was at one this morning. Mm-hmm. And where the problem comes, and I have written on this, and I've been published on this, and where the problem comes, not in the distance, it's that transfer from one stretcher to the other stretcher.
Absolutely.
And the hurry that they try to do it in causes the mistake. So why not just have an extra stretcher for each of these carriers? Once you've called the plane, you have your team put them on a stretcher that's going to go out the door and into the plane. That, when that happens, you don't have a bunch of people doing this and that, but you have them actually talking to each other. Because where the problem comes in is the transfer of information. That's where the real drops happen. An IV, unless it's a central line, you can usually restart it again pretty quickly. And that's pretty rare, and that's just because they're moving fast. Because they're on the ground, they want to get up, they want to get going. So there's other ways to paint this wall. And those need to be included, really, in looking at it. Because if you can save 5 minutes there and get better information transferred instead of the other way around, then you're going to make some real changes. I do a lot of medical malpractice investigations, and you always look at where the information gets transferred, because that's where most of the mistakes, and insurance companies will tell you that. So if we're just looking at ground and planes going up and down, that's one thing. But if we're looking at patient care, I think you need more medical people to start talking about this. Because if it doesn't work that way, then what's the point of going there?
And Dr. Sullivan has been invited to come in.
I think that's the whole point of the study, though.
But I didn't
small,
hear
a small group. Yeah. So that
I didn't hear this. Ahead. I didn't hear this. What I just talked about.
Yeah.
Going on, it said, "Oh, that's a piece of the island thing."
Yeah. At this point, you know, what I've been looking at is basically transport times. You know, time on the ground to when we arrive, when we then leave the ER, back to that. Looking at those metrics, trying to figure out all of that, as far as you know, and then look at any specific. Problems that we may have encountered, whether we've dislodged a tooth, whether we've dislodged an IV, any of those kinds of things would be accounted.
And those things are pretty rare.
That's, yeah.
It's really the information and having people not doing a bunch of stuff with their hands.
Right, and I would hope that as this progresses, we could involve Peace Island's staff to start commenting about what's going on inside the ED. Basically as EMS.
So you're going to reach out and do that with them?
I don't know.
I'm not telling you. I'm just asking what's going on here.
That's
the way I see it.
We can discuss within that working group and see what kind of cooperation we can get from inside the ED.
So that definitely is within the confines of the study group's plan, to my understanding. Actually, I've had preliminary discussions with Mary Ann Keene, Peace Island, about the medical component of it, and certainly, you know, they're willing to look into that from the ED perspective and the medical perspective. And it should be part and parcel of your study.
Should be.
But we need to start with their participation. Like I said, you know, we need participation from all those folks, Mark, that you rattled off, to make a go of this and get their opinions. Otherwise, you know, it's an incomplete study. An incomplete study, by definition.
No, we can leak the worst of water.
Well, that's it. But hopefully it'll go that way.
Are you looking too at, you know, and I guess this goes back to your FAA expertise, like to height restrictions, like potential height restrictions for buildings around the new helipad? Like, would that just, for instance, like if Peace Health decided they wanted to add another floor onto their building, would that somehow impact the helipad? Would the helipad impact that, or would anyone, any property owner around this area be impacted by the helipad being there?
Yeah.
And you know, and just like a safety concern of landing and taking off, like that can be risky, and there are people around here as opposed to the airport.
Yeah.
I mean, so those are things you'll look at.
Well, with respect to the building height, that has already been evaluated. And the FAA has evaluated the existing building prior to its construction and approved it for its existing height and distance from the clearways associated with the airport.
Okay.
A helipad doesn't present any additional height. It's just on ground level.
Oh, I just meant height of existing buildings and or potential buildings near the helipad, if that would be impact, you know, property owners and development that they want to do.
No, and you just can't put new stories on existing buildings without a lot of expense, and I haven't even heard of that in discussion.
I haven't. I just said, like, potentially, would it impact that?
You've run into, again, you'd have to have another FAA study concerning that additional height because it's approximately the airport. There is a navigation agreement in place between Peace Health and Port Freddy Harbor. Mm-hmm. And that's a 14-page document that would be part of this study, and that it looks at a lot of these things. But again, we don't have the expertise to sit in judgment on with respect to the helipad. David Ketchum does. He has proposed four different locations, any of which would be suitable. And so we're looking to outside expertise with regard to those particulars. And that too will be part of the study. But we really would like to hear from Peace Health on this. Again, they've all been invited. Dale Zender, Mary Ann Keene, Dr. Michael Sullivan.
Okay.
So do we have anybody new come in who is interested in running for commissioner?
Do I see a hand?
I would like to ask now, it seems like the people we have in the room now are come just about every meeting to the meeting. So we asked before you got here, Karen, about are there any things that we could do to get potential candidates to look at, even looking into running for commissioner, or things, or even that you guys, you have your own circle outside when you go outside of a meeting of potential people that you might feel would be, you know, good commissioner people to run.
Are you looking for a comment?
Yes.
Am I surprised that there are very few people here for this meeting? The announcement of this 1 o'clock session went up just a couple of days ago, and it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a weekday. On the other hand, the press release outlining the open house for the meet and greet has, almost 2 weeks to work, and that may be, you may get better results from that. Mm-hmm. I think there's been an absence of, I think it's late in the game, frankly. I think this outreach should have happened a month or two ago, but that's water under the bridge. So here we go.
We've been talking about it for months,
since
but
January,
we've had a lot of business to take care of.
Oh, I understand. I'm simply commenting on the attempt to reach potential.
And even when we were talking about the commissioner job duties and for the meetings, you know, I haven't gotten any communications from outside the public other than yours. About a potential, you know, commissioners. And we have 4 positions that we have to fill. 4. And so.
Can I just make one comment
there?
Sure. I'm not seeing the job description on today's agenda. Does that mean it's been shelved?
It is on the agenda.
It's just that I can't.
It's part of Pam's report.
Okay.
Or a topic of discussion now, too. We have 15 minutes for it. What do you think?
Well, we could talk about the job description.
Eileen has another question.
Yes, ma'am.
I would suggest another topic that we haven't talked about, and that is the, let's see how you call it, the long-term care, healthcare island, inter-island healthcare foundation, and the Committee on Long-Term Care. And I think the person from the Harbor.
Village at the Harbor?
Evan Curlin.
And I didn't hear that, but I'm sure this is something that you're talking about too, and that prospective candidates would want to know what you're thinking about long-term care.
We passed a resolution at our last meeting to present $10,000, provided the other public hospital districts do likewise, for us to do it by ourselves with the gifting of the public funds. But if if the other hospital districts in the county participate in donating a like amount of money, that would provide the $50,000 seed money, or close to it, that would be necessary to move this project forward. So that was the work product of last month's meeting.
So that would provide for long-term care countywide?
No, it would just be seed money for a study, once again, an evaluation. Jody Corona is involved, along with Evan Perlaz. The Inter-Island Healthcare Foundation has been involved. So there are a number of entities that are trying to move that forward, including this board.
The feasibility study that we're trying to raise money to pay for Jody Corona to do is so that we can take that information out to the public and get donations and get people to donate for long-term care, whatever whatever it may look like.
So donations, they wouldn't know whether it would be for a facility or sending them off?
They would eventually. That's the whole idea of the feasibility study, is it's gonna put everything in perspective. It's gonna say, this is what you need to do. It's countywide.
But the fundraising, if I give money, it's that money's gonna be used for what?
Right now, if you give money, it would be used for the feasibility study. Yep. After the feasibility study is done, then the money would be used for whatever the person wants it to be used for. Either they can specify to be used for building buildings or for hiring people or for homes or for whatever they come up with. The nursing, there's a lot of staff, there's a lot of things. But that feasibility study is like step one that we have to get through.
And it's not only going to address potential structural replacements, certainly not a replication of what the Life Care Center of America, that just financially that design doesn't fly, no pun intended. But as we did with Peace Island Medical Center, they said on a capital investment, best way to do that, financial sustainability with the monies available, whether it's fee-for-service facility fees or donation. And that's what the feasibility study does, is it addresses all those different niches and see if we can do anything. It might come to the point where it's like nothing is going to survive financially. You just throw money down to a deep hole. We hope it doesn't come to that, but we don't know. And Jody Corona was instrumental in Peace Island. Peace Island is still with us, and so we have tasked her to help out the Inter-Island Healthcare Foundation for the feasibility study to address long-term care, and I think she'll do a bang-up job.
Yeah, the public hasn't come forward with contributions in significant measure. So the heat and light that we experienced when Life Care Center shut down hasn't really yielded a persistent material contribution to solving the problem. If people want to make donations, there is an avenue for them to do that through the Inter-Island Healthcare Foundation, and it needs money. Right now, Evan Paralyze is over on Lopez Island making a presentation to that hospital district, and he also will be presenting at Orcas. And I believe Evan is doing that today, isn't he?
Yes, he is. One of the islands.
Lopez. Yeah.
And so, but we need all three of the public hospital districts together to agree to this, and we made a motion that passed unanimously to contribute $10,000 to that study. Mm-hmm. Money for the study.
How have I missed the fact that somebody asked me for money to help with it?
Well, Evan Perlis had written an article for the newspaper some time ago, and it's been in discussion here publicly. So, I have encouraged him to do an op-ed piece to really put it out there. So.
Thank you.
Can we take a 10-minute break to
go to
the bathroom and get a glass of water, because we're going to sit here for another 2 hours?
There's food in there.